This is a story about control. My control. Control of what I say, control of what I do. And this time I'm gonna do it my way. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Are we ready? I am. 'Cause it's all about control. And I've got lots of it.
I hope you are as excited as I am, because whenever I hear Janet Jackson start doing that and she's all, this is a story about, like, I get really excited. I totally do. So hopefully you do too, and you're just sitting there like on the edge of your seat going, oh my gosh, I'm so excited, it's hard to be fabulous! Because I am. So my name is Mikester. I will be one of your hosts this evening, and joining me, without further ado, is the other host, Freedom Guy.
This is the Freedom Guy, and we don't use those buzzwords lightly, you know, the words liberty and the words freedom. I mean, when we say them here on Armed and Fabulous, they stand for something, they're principled, and by God, not only are we making sure that you're armed physically and mentally, but you will be fabulous.
You will be fabulous. And by will, we mean probably already are, but just need a little coaching, you know, just like, you know, anybody else who
already
has maybe a wardrobe but does not a
show,
rocket.
Right?
Right.
I mean, you are in the infancy of fabulous just because you listen to this show. And then we add to that as it grows, so to speak.
So let me tell everybody where they can find us so that they can go ahead and, like, start stalking us on social media, because, I don't know, if I wasn't me, I would stalk me. So I know you're probably thinking, how can we stalk them? So here's how. You can go to OutrightUSA.org, which is, like, the kind of central, that's who we are, Outright Libertarians. That's our website. In fact, actually, I'm going to open that up right now for myself and just see, because I think Stephen has said he was going to post some blogs this week. But meanwhile, while you're all doing that, you can also go to Facebook.com and or Twitter.com/OutrightUSA. We also, of course, have social media profiles at both of those. And then, if that's not enough, you can find the Facebook page for our actual show at Facebook.com/ArmedFab. Or just type Armed and Fabulous into the search bar on Facebook. Ta-da,
it'll definitely come up.
It will definitely come
up. Yeah, and
well,
I mean,
actually, you know what will come up? Not only that, but there's a couple of other, don't be fooled, they're not us. We're the awesome one.
Yeah, we're the only one that is basically speaking to your individual liberty. Everything else is out of us. So
I stand corrected. There has not been a new blog in the last week. So just kidding. But while you are there, click in the top in the middle. There's two different buttons. There's a PayPal join, renew, donate link. So you can become a member. And then we also have a link because we're pooling money to. Okay, I'm getting feedback.
Have we ever gone through a whole entire show, Mikester, where one of us has not gotten a phone call?
I mean, it's just... No, I don't think we have. Maybe you can put us on hold if you need to.
Oh, yeah, I already did it.
Oh.
And I'm back.
Oh. You know they're fabulous when they can multitask so fast you don't even notice what's happening.
I mean, come on. Can I just say that if I hear the words war on Christians or war on Christmas when you frickin' start it before Halloween, I might have to. God forbid, say I would violate the nap. I mean, I might have to just arm them, but I mean, arm them with some information. But
do
I
it,
digress.
Girl. Do it.
Well, I mean, come on, people. I mean, okay. There is no war on Christmas. There is no war on Christianity. America is the safe space, or it's supposed to be, right? So you don't need a safe space on your campus. You live in America. It is the safe place. You have freedom of speech. You have freedom of and from religion. I mean, you have the freedom to defend yourself in any shape, form, or fashion you choose fit, and with the amount of force that you need to basically save your life. With all of that said,
finish your thought, and then I just want to let you know, in the spirit of freedom of speech, it looks like we have a caller on hold. So,
oh, my God. That is awesome.
Finalize your thought, and then we'll switch.
Oh, I was just going to say, if any of you have any inkling or any questions or don't understand any of that, you are in the right place on Armed and Fabulous to know exactly what all of that is.
Yay. So without further ado, let's just jump right to the lines and see. Hi, caller. You're on the line with Armed and Fabulous.
Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate you gentlemen's take on this issue, and it's something I really want to discuss with people who share your viewpoints, such as I understand them to be.
Sure, what's on your mind?
I suspect, and correct me if I'm wrong, I suspect you may be railing, or dare I say dissenting, against some of the heterodoxy that has come to characterize much of the, as I put it, the homosexual activist movement, which speaks in collective cultural Marxist terms with a great deal of dialectical materialism and pitting groups against each other and identifying, rather than emphasizing the individual and liberty, which for me is always the issue, because I'm a constitutional conservative, they tend to speak like they're a bunch of little Orwellian speech control ministers. And I don't know. Now, I don't know if I've summed this up correctly or not. Am I at least on the right track here?
Well, you know, I think you're definitely on the right track. I would agree with everything that you just said. Yeah.
The only thing that I would probably add to that is the fact that, you know, I used to say that I was a constitutionalist for a long time. The Freedom Guy was talked about that, and I have changed my viewpoint on that because I don't believe that the Constitution is what gives me my liberty or freedom. I have that with or without the Constitution.
Yeah. As a constitutionalist, I definitely agree with that. The Constitution, in fact, has been stated in the Federalist Papers when they were arguing for it after its adoption. Many people said the Constitution does not grant any rights whatsoever. You're endowed with certain inalienable rights as espoused in the Declaration by virtue of your existence as a human being. The Constitution merely exists to safeguard them that already pre-existed the Constitution. So to that extent, yes, I agree with you completely. You are absolutely correct. But I would like to say this, that as a constitutionalist, take the recent Obergefell versus Hodges decision by the United States Supreme Court, utterly bereft of any constitutional reasoning whatsoever, because the Constitution places in the hands of the people, as one of the people's inalienable rights, and to a lesser extent, the state's inalienable rights, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, which hold that everything the Constitution doesn't discuss and forbid or allow, under its protections, is to be decided by the people and the states through their state legislatures. One of those was marriage. The Supreme Court totally turned aside that principle and decided the people could not decide that for themselves within their various state borders, as many, by the way, had already decided to allow it through arguments in state legislatures. They simply imposed homosexual marriage on all 50 states of the Union, whether the people in those respective states wanted it or not.
So
well, let me say
me
this. I don't think they imposed homosexual marriage on the
no
state
doubt.
As far as they may have redefined the law.
Yeah, they did. They redefined marriage, literally. Because marriage equal. It was precisely equal. I'm a heterosexual, utter, complete, total heterosexual. I had the same exact right to marry someone of the same sex that a homosexual or a lesbian did. Exactly. I had exactly the same right to marry a person of the opposite sex that they did, but the Supreme Court said, well, the states can't decide that anymore. We will define what marriage should be, and we will tell you what you must adopt within your state laws.
So if we're going to have heterosexual marriage imposed on same-sex families, isn't that cultural Marxism?
No,
because
that's the Ninth and Tenth Amendment issue. The people decide.
We were being prevented by force from.
The Constitution is silent about marriage, completely. Doesn't say a word one way or the other.
So that
it's
right would
Ninth
be reserved
and tenth
to the
amendment
people.
Issue. The
but
people
that right is then reserved
the
to the
right
people.
To make those legal
people.
Distinctions. This is the same
but
thing
we're
we did in Roe versus Wade with the abortion decision. That was a matter for the states to decide within their borders whether or not this medical procedure was going to be regulated in the states. Completely.
All right.
Supreme Court decided
okay.
No, we don't think.
So, first of all, when you call a talk show, you don't get to talk over the host. So, I'm just going to mute you for a moment and speak. So, when we have basically heterosupremacy, which is what that is, the idea that opposite sex relationships are superior to same sex ones, when we have that imposed on us through force of law, that is cultural Marxism. That's precisely the kind of collectivism that individualist philosophies stand against. Second of all, when it says that a right is reserved either to the states or to the people, we are people. We have a right to initiate contract with one another just as much as the rest of you do. So that's what legal marriage is all about. It's about initiating a contract that builds a union around the, you know, the love that you're building a stable family upon. That's what it defines property arrangements for the family.
Well, and what we should add, Mikester, is the fact that a lot of people that don't understand that outright libertarians and as libertarians in general, we believe that the government has no business, whether it's the federal or the state, has no business within the marriage business. They should not be issuing those licenses. So that's the ideological principled concept is that the government is not involved. Whether it's local, all the way up to the federal government, is not involved within the marriage business. The issue comes, and to speak to the caller, is when the government is involved, whether it is local or all the way up to the federal government, when it is involved in anything, whether it be marriage or property rights or free speech or the right to bear arms, when it becomes involved in any of that, it must treat all of the individuals that are part of that we the people, it must treat all of them equally. It cannot exclude, it cannot segregate, it cannot have separate but equal. So as you can't say that because it's not in the Constitution, now the state gets to decide, and now the majority rules, because I don't believe that the majority rules, because I don't believe that we are a democracy, I believe that we are a republic, and I also believe that if we are going to talk the majority rules, then there are several instances within discrimination that has happened within this country, with slavery, with women not having the right to vote, with property owners only being the ones that have the right to vote or nor rule, with Jim Crow laws that don't allow certain people to vote, with other laws that don't allow minorities to actually own guns, and so therefore they cannot defend themselves against the oppressors who are the KKK. If that's the case, and if you're going to argue within that point, then at any majority can rule over me and take anything that belongs to me, including my liberty and freedom. And I just don't believe that.
Well, to some extent, there's some truth to that. And to some extent, there is some truth to that. And first of all, I'm saying I'm a black man. So, you know, arguing this at times can seem on the surface to be problematic. But it's not for me because I do believe in the Constitution. Now, prior to the passage of the 13th Amendment, slavery was legal. No matter how evil it was legal and constitutional in the states that it adopted. Prior to the passage of the 13th Amendment, yes, it was legal. But the Constitution, however, in order to forbid it throughout the 50 states, was amended. The amendatory process occurs when two-thirds of both houses of Congress sends it to the three states for ratification, and three-fourths of those states then ratify it. It becomes a change to the Constitution. So slavery then was declared illegal throughout all 50 states. Now, in the case of Jim Crow law, again, we had the 14th Amendment passed in 1868. Which said that all citizens within a state are not to be denied equal protection of laws within the boundaries of the state. Now, it took a long time to get that straightened out with Brown versus Board of Education, but nonetheless, it was the law of the land under the Constitution in 1868. Prior to that, the states were free to pass Jim Crow laws because the Constitution didn't forbid it. See, what should have been done to allow for homosexual marriage, which, by the way, already does discriminate by virtue of age. You got to be a certain age to be married. It's not a universal right, unlike due process of law, which is universal no matter how old you are. You discriminate against by virtue of familial relationship. You're not allowed to be married to any other person. If you're already married to any other person in any other legal jurisdiction in the world, you can't marry another person without divorcing or annulling that marriage first. So that's another form of discrimination. The fact of the matter that you're discriminated against marrying someone within your family, either by blood or legal relationship, a member of your immediate family. You can't marry. There's more discrimination. There's any numbers of discrimination within marriage already that still exists despite the passage of homosexual marriage. And, yes, I do believe heterosexual marriage is superior to homosexual marriage. I believe it's vastly, in magnitude, exponentially superior and necessary for the existence of the human race. So I don't think homosexual marriage is equal.
Disagreement. We're only our show is only 45 minutes long, so we got to kind of move along here. But I totally, you know what, I respect your freedom of conscience, and that's kind of part of the reason, you know, I appreciate your call. I just appreciate the fact that you called in, and we'll leave it right there.
I do, too. I'm with Mike. Sure, we have 5 minutes.
All I want is clarity. You don't have to agree with me. It's okay.
No, and I just want to leave a note for you to think of, for you to think of in the future. Just because that you feel something is superior, like heterosexual marriage, or like at one point,
continuation of the human race.
Well, let me finish, okay?
Yeah, but we have a procreative purpose through adoption. We can build stable families, and we can totally take those unwanted children
to procreate. No matter what, you got to have heterosexuals there somewhere.
Well, but here's the thing, let me finish, and I'll let you know when I'm producing
a bunch of children that you don't want. So that's why the orphanages are full, and Planned Parenthood, I mean, don't even make me go there.
But since it's such a big issue that you love the fetus and hate the child, it's unduly cumbersome. It's really because of the adoptive process being unduly cumbersome that they're so full. There are many people who will take those children who should readily be able to pass an adoption.
We agree. It is unduly cumbersome. Tell us about it. We can't even, in a lot of states, even though we still have marriage, we still can't adopt.
Well, I'm talking about for heterosexuals as well as homosexuals. And I'm not categorically against homosexuals adopting children. Not categorically.
I don't believe that heterosexual
couples first, but I'm not utterly against it.
Okay, let me say this. I don't believe that heterosexual marriage is superior to any other marriage because not all heterosexual marriages produce children. With that said, you by saying that even as a black man that offends me that you would say that heterosexual marriage is superior and therefore no other marriages should be allowed to exist or should have the rights or the freedoms or the liberty to have that exact same right when at one point the white individuals thought that they were superior to the black man and that's the reason they kept them down for so long. So your argument of something being superior does not guarantee or does not qualify or does not validate the fact that it should be a liberty or freedom for one select group of individuals. And that is even more collectivism when you try to say that heterosexuals are superior in any way to homosexuals at any form, in any grade of life. And I will end it at that, and we will move to more subjects, and we thank you for calling, and please call again.
Oh, Carrie, I'm going to, bless your heart, do you mind if I just mute you for a brief moment?
Feel free.
Okay. Just because, well, racial supremacy came to the surface, it makes me uncomfortable that I would leave the person muted and never let them kind of like say goodbye, because that's just, I don't know, it just makes me feel weird. But we do have to detach, so I'm just going to unmute so that our caller can kind of exit gracefully.
Well,
hi, caller.
I thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it, because I don't want to leave the wrong impression here. But, you know, I remember clarity is important to me more so than agreement. I never did say heterosexuals as individuals are superior to homosexuals. Many homosexuals are superior to many or most heterosexuals. That's not my argument. The institution of heterosexual marriage is superior to the institution of homosexual marriage for the simple reason it is vital to the not only to the procreative process, but to the stabilization of civilization and culture. That's all I said. I didn't say individuals. I'm talking about the institution. I'm speaking about the law here. And when we make law, we make it from the basis of principle and reason. I can make an epistemological argument for heterosexual marriage that is utterly devoid of religious influences. I can make it an Aristotelian argument for heterosexual marriage over homosexual marriage on the basis of simple logic. So,
okay,
I mean, there are many ways to advance my argument. And if anyone wants to make an argument that white people are superior to black people, make the argument. I'm ready to argue against that. I will do it on the basis of epistemological knowledge and empirical knowledge, data, and everything else. They can make their argument. I'm not afraid of any argument.
Okay, so invite your friends to our page, and we'll invite our friends to our page, and we can have a giant flame war there, because I think
I'm
that sounds...
I'm ready to have it. I love a good debate. There's nothing I love more. I mean,
I
go toe-to-toe with anybody, anytime, anywhere. You have no idea. I'm the king of debate. Believe me, when it comes to debating, there ain't nothing I love more, especially when it's honest and when it's – I don't care how spirited it gets as long as it stays civil. I'm not afraid of any argument, literally. I'm not. That I'm an imbecile.
Okay.
Make the argument that I'm an imbecile. I'm ready to defend or counter that argument. I don't care. Make the arguments.
All right. Thank you very much, caller. I hope that you keep listening. We're here every week at the same time. Okay, sorry.
And I want to, you know, I want to say, caller, I thank you for calling in. And granted, we love a good debate too. Just remember, in the future, when you do call, we do have some rules when you're going to call in and debate. And those rules are that you make your statement, and then just like with any debate, you let us counter with a statement without the interruption. Because therefore, not only can you hear us and we can hear you, but our callers can hear both sides and make their own educated decisions. I will say this. Other than the fact that someone that is a really and truly only women can do the procreation that you speak so highly of with the help of a man, whether that man is involved in their lives as far as a marriage, or if they happen to be two lesbians and they get artificial insemination, there does not have to be a heterosexual, a male-female dynamic for that family or for that marriage to work. And when you say that that is superior, you are automatically telling every other type of marriage that is out there that it is inferior at its base, and I just don't believe that. I think all of them have validity, and they are all equal, and they all strive in different ways to be successful marriages and successful families. With that, I think we should move to our crosshairs.
Yes, let's find out who's in the crosshairs. Well, darling, I'm kind of beklemmed here. My bosoms are heaving with anger, and I need a breath. And since you picked out tonight's crosshairs, I think, and since you're already on a roll, why did you be the one to introduce it?
Well, tonight, the gentleman that is in the crosshairs has been told or given an award or been named by Out Magazine the best ally that the LGBTQ community has. This person is a Democrat, and I don't know that the Democrats are the best ally that the LGBT community has, or any one Democrat can be that ally, for the simple fact that the Democrats really just are about telling you what you want to hear, getting your vote, and using the federal government and laws and acts to try to make you think that in some way the law itself has to say that you're equal to anyone else, when really all you need is to educate yourself that as an individual, you're equal to everyone else, and that all the relationships that you have as an individual are equal to any other relationships that are out there. So with that said, we're going to play our little, and this is in no means a call. This is just that this person is where we want to put him, and I'll announce it after this little tune. The person on our crosshairs tonight is President Barack Obama. And the only reason that he's in our crosshairs is because Out Magazine has named him.
Your entire presidency. Oh, sorry, I got carried away by the moment.
Pretty much. I mean, come on, dude. You're either for liberty and freedom, or individual liberty and freedom, or you're not. And just because the Supreme Court has a ruling, or because the polls swing a certain way to say that you should talk about equality or discrimination or any type of benefits or anything that may happen within a certain community or a certain group or any collective that is out there does not make you its greatest ally in any shape, form, or fashion. Thank you.
It doesn't. He is absolutely – President Obama is – I'll just speak – very briefly, I'll try. Of course, my briefly is an entire 45 minutes. No, just kidding. Okay, so this man is like no friend of liberty whatsoever. I don't think that he met a form of coercion he didn't like his entire life. His entire career is built on, a series of progressively more aggressive acts of state. And, it's important to be real from a libertarian. Okay. No, I'll save that for later. The whole collectivist spiel is coming up next. But for now, I'll just keep it in one perspective. The Out magazine gave him this award based on, the idea that he's libertarians. I think it's really important to keep it in perspective that the ultimate goal would be to abolish the marriage licensing procedure completely. So, I'll give, the glimmer of the iota that, the Supreme Court, who is really the source of the decision, moved us one step closer towards, having the state out of our families completely. It had nothing to do with Obama. But, it wasn't really a victory in libertarian terms. It was because the egalitarian, application of law is important. Don't get me wrong. That's a constitutional principle. It's very important, and I'm glad that happened. So thank you, Supreme Court, not Obama. But as for Obama,
the Supreme Court should have been the real the real person they named is the greatest ally of the LGBT community, right?
I mean, you know, unless you happen to be a gay person in the Middle East, and then he'll drone bomb you to death, you know, while he roars triumphantly with your blood all over his body. And that's my final thought on that.
Now, if you're going to act like a bitch, then you're going to die like a bitch.
So
that's like the best. Other than our intro and our exit, that is like the best part of the show right there. When we basically just said, you don't deserve what you're getting. You're a nobody. Your 15 minutes of fame are over. Or
bye-bye.
8 years, whatever the heck it may be.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You got another year of being of your lame duck, and then you're over. So we are down to our last actual 14 minutes, and so I'm going to try to vomit out the actual topic of the show tonight, because we entitled it The Collectivist Thought Police. And our caller was actually onto a little bit of something about how the mainstream LGBT movement really has done a disservice where and don't get me wrong, it's really politicians, right? People who are grabbing for wealth and power, who understand how to manipulate the mind of the public. So they have really aggressively used the concept of collectivized identities. They've used identity politics as a weapon. And, you know, naively or in some cases perhaps willingly, the mainstream movement kind of became subverted by that. But the thing that I want to bring to the surface and highlight is that what we're seeing in libertarian culture is we're seeing, and I mean, okay, we've seen lately how these campuses are like, there's kind of like this, there's this absurd kind of, it's come to a level where like, there are thought police on the campuses and you can't see certain things. And I agree that PC culture is going a little bit too far in many cases. Having said that, sometimes there's a kernel of truth in the idea that language can represent power imbalances in society or whatever, and there's a revolutionary potential in choosing your words with care. But I digress. There's this new kind of awareness in libertarian culture. It's actually not new. It's a paleo-libertarian strategy that has existed since the 80s. We can't speak certain words even because there's this like sort of irrational, I don't know if I want to call it collectophobia or what, but it makes it really hard for us to do LGBT activism in the party, or it makes it even hard for us to articulate solutions that might be relevant to, for example, the Black Lives Matter movement, because every time you speak of an identity that might be mistaken for a collective noun, yeah, like literally we have basically an irrational fear of a part of speech. If it smells like a collective noun, you know, unless it's like, I don't know, white identity politics or something, you know, that conservatarians are comfortable with, and that's okay. But like anything else, like if you're a black trans, if you're a trans woman of color, you're screwed. Because all of your identities are considered collective nouns, and if you point out that you're not allowed to enter a restroom without fear of incarceration, if you point out that you can't even be incarcerated without fear of rape or murder, if you attempt to lift up your own individual liberty and speak out for your own liberation, you will be shouted down by libertarian PC culture. You will be shouted down by the collectivist thought police. You will be told that your issues are a slippery slope. Your mere existence is, a dangerous – like, anyway, I'll just pause right there because that's the subject, and I want to give the co-hosts time to build on that theme. So, Freedom Guy, it's all yours for a moment.
Well, I think that we have a really bad tendency to if it's something that is super popular or is extremely something that the majority of libertarians could get behind, the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, the right to self-defense. I mean, no one is going to say that there's a gun collective within the Libertarian Party. You know, if we talk about the right to consume anything that you want to and ending the war on drugs, and I mean, there's not going, and decriminalization of drugs, there's not going to be someone that says there is a drug collective within the Libertarian Party. Now, there's going to be some people within the Libertarian Party that are going to say, we're tired of hearing about drugs and gays. That's exactly what they'll say, right?
Right.
We're tired of hearing about those because the Libertarian Party is much more than that. And you know what? Guess what? And they're right in one instance. The Libertarian Party is much more than that. But within that statement also rings the kernel of truth that is still also part of the Libertarian Party. I mean, if I have to give you an example, if I give you one example of a black trans woman, and you are all for her being able to have all of her individual liberty and freedom, why does it matter if we say that all black individuals should have that individual liberty freedom? Why does it matter if we say all women should have that individual liberty and freedom? Why does it matter if we say all trans individuals should have that liberty and freedom?
Well, you know, that's exactly my point. Like, I'm trying to tell people, what are you so afraid of? What are you so afraid of when these particular words, and that's literally what it is. It's like a thought police thing. They're afraid of this idea that if I, in fact, I'll just make it specific because we did some activism here in Arizona around Monica Jones and her struggle with the manifestation law. So she had been basically arrested for walking while trans. She was accused of manifesting, sex worker. Basically, she literally was just walking down the street. And here in Arizona, there's a law, here in Phoenix, I should say, there's a law that says, I don't know, anyway, they profiled her as a sex worker because she was big, beautiful, and trans. And that's apparently a crime. So it was just like you couldn't have handed libertarianism a better case on a platter to do liberation activism around, because it had everything to do with the state initiating coercive force against an individual in a harmful way, in a totally unjust way. She wasn't doing anything wrong. Totally victimless.
Yeah,
like, if anything, she did our community a favor by making it a little bit more beautiful in a scuzzy part of town.
Well, and you know, because of the her being embraced by the left, okay?
Yeah, it's
that's
right
where all
finger.
Of that attention went.
Yeah, totally, totally. So the ideological opposition grabbed hold of what was actually a free market issue, right? Because sex work is actually about exchanging value for value. It's a free market transaction. So how the for lack of a better term, the communists, how the leftists stole that issue. Well, I know why, because they actually aren't afraid to talk about social issues. That's why. They can say black trans women of color. I repeat myself. It's either one or the other, trans women of color. They can say that phrase without, like, running in fear like little children, hiding their heads in their ears, because, they can have rational dialogue using collective nouns. And it's okay for us to do that. We have the non-aggression principle. We have nothing to fear.
Well, and with all of this said, I can say that I see where some of them are coming from. I don't agree with it, but I can see where they're coming from, right? I can see where the fact that as a party, we're wanting to grow about individual liberty, and it always seems that we talk about groups as opposed to that. But if your message, if your real message of individual liberty for all and your non-aggression principle were working so well without you applying or showing how those two principles apply to individuals, even when they're in groups, was working so well, you would be winning elections.
Well, yeah, and it's like, you know, gun owner, you made a good point. Gun owners are a group. It doesn't mean I'm doing collectivism when I talk about the right to bear arms, because that's an individual right. Just like trading something I have for value in the marketplace is an individual right. If I happen to be, you know, a big, beautiful black trans woman, then I have a scarce resource that has value, and I have a right to trade it for value. Right? That's, I mean, you couldn't get much more libertarian than that. But no, because it's an identity that is considered collectivist and it's associated with the left. Oh, I guess, you know, I was over here waving my arms. I'm like, we got a great issue here. Oh, silence. Crickets. They're over here.
Well, and the other thing you have
about,
to remember is every single one of those people that are also saying we can't have collectivism, they belong to a myriad of tons of other groups.
Right. The fucking Libertarian Party is a group.
I mean, they belong to a collective called Libertarians.
Right. America is a group. You know that thing that they want to build a wall around? Oh, except they're not racist, but yeah, wall, because Constitution, right? Yeah, that's a group. Well, of course, actually, actual libertarians don't believe in imaginary lines, so that's actually a nationalist. That also is old party thinking, but
well, and don't get me wrong. I mean, most of the individuals that will bring up something about there being a collective, they either belong to the group of they're white, so they belong to that group. They belong to the male heterosexual group, right? And in ways, they belong to the bigot group, whether they see themselves as that or not.
Yes.
Right? Those are three groups that they belong to, and by them actually saying that we don't want to talk about these other individuals because we might be talking about them as a collective or as a group, means that they're saying that they want the group that they belong to, but it's not a collective, to have that special treatment of not having to have that other talked about at all.
We're down to about 2 minutes. So my final thought here is just I share with everybody else the awareness that politicians, members of the ruling class, are in fact using identity politics as a weapon to divide the people and pass bad law. I acknowledge that, and I'm totally on board with that. Where I differ is that I believe that we should look towards those laws that they have passed and call for them to be abolished. They've divided us up, and they've picked and chosen laws to target us with. So we have nothing to lose by calling for abolishing them. That's my final thought. You have anything to add?
And the Freedom Guy's final thought would be, anytime that you hear the words collective from anyone that claims to be a libertarian, the first question you should be asking them is, what groups do they belong to? And even the groups that they don't consider themselves to belong to, such as white, heterosexual, male.